Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah.
Hi, this is David Levy, and you're listening to my friends on the Tennis Podcast.
Well, hello and welcome to Draw Day at the 2024 Australian Open. We are now just a handful of days away from the opening Grand Slam of the tennis season. And we come to you, myself, Catherine Ritiger, David Law, Matt Roberts from Melbourne Park. Yes, that ambient sound you hear in the background is the lovely trickle of the fountain, which I'm sort of having to hold myself back from splashing around in. We've got the announcer over there doing something involving kids short tennis. We've got a big screen over Matt's shoulder showing qualifying, which is very much in full swing on all of the outside courts, and we're in a very, very good place. Thank you, incidentally, to our lovely friend Dave for introducing the show today. Just adding, Dave, to the good mood that you find us all in today. These are big smiles on all our faces, David.
Yeah, Dave Levy is a very long time friend of all of us. We've worked with him for many years too. Great supporter, and frankly, if he's on the show, then I feel even warmer than I do sitting in this sun that I'm really not used to in January.
It's going to be another 2.5 weeks of shows where we tread the line of hashtag gratitude for our good fortune in life to find ourselves here in this wonderful place, talking about the sport that we also love so much and not being terribly, terribly smug and annoying.
Yeah, always a tricky balance. You've already been unfollowed on Instagram by a friend.
I have, yeah.
David's been weighing up what he can and can't send back home. You know, these are the life decisions we have to make.
Yeah, it's our struggle is incredibly real, guys. But look, we are absolutely thrilled to be here, not just because it's warm and sunny, but because we're pumped. We're pumped for the first Grand Slam in the year. We're pumped for the year. We're pumped for the draws, which were conducted about 2 hours ago. And we're going to be getting into those in just a moment's time. But first, I want to tell you about our friends at On Location. 321, the premium hospitality and experience provider. We are proud to be sponsored by On Location, the premium hospitality and experience provider throughout the Australian Open 2024. And I am here to tell you that for the first time in history, official Paris 2024 travel packages from On Location are available online, making it easy for you to enjoy the thrill of the Olympic Games and the wonder of Paris like never before. I personally always find it easy to enjoy the thrill of the Olympic Games, but I can only imagine how easy On Location can make it for you. Your Olympic Games adventure comes with guaranteed tickets to the sports events of your choice and accommodation in Paris, plus world-class hospitality and options for custom tours and activities to immerse you in French culture, food, shopping, and more. Oh. On Location's wide range of official travel packages has been created to suit every need, from shorter stays such as the Discover 2024 package to longer ones like the Explore 2024 package. Frankly, both of those sound great. I like to discover and I like to explore. They often go hand in hand. All include guaranteed tickets to sports event categories A to D. Don't know what that means.
They're all great.
Pretty sure all categories are great. And they come with multiple possibilities for add-on services and elevated hospitality options. So the thing to do is to go to toursfortennis.com/podcast, toursfortennis.com/podcast, and select Olympic Games Hospitality to see what they have to offer. Packages can be purchased online, or a dedicated on-location team member can contact you directly to create your perfect package. And, of course, the link to check them out and all the wonderful Olympicsy things that they have to offer is available in our show notes and in our newsletter. Now, the Australian Open 2024 draws. I think there is only one place to start, and that is where we started the draws, at the very top of the women's draw, where we find name numbers 1 through 4, three of them previous Australian Open champions. We have round one at the top of the draw, Iga Świątek to face Sofia Kenin, and Danielle Collins to face Angelique Kerber, with the winners of those two matches to meet in round two.
Yeah. Well, I mean, my immediate reaction was just huge excitement, because I want to see Iga Świątek, probably above all other players, tested. I just want to see her game, which is so overwhelming against the vast majority, up against the best of the rest. And the thing is, she can only play 7 players in the course of the tournament. I just want to see them be as explosive and as interesting as possible. On paper, that's exactly what we've got there. I mean, Sofia Kenin winning this title here 4 years ago, wasn't it? Is that right? 4 years ago. And knowing what she's like at her best is intriguing. The second round, Kerber, when she won this title, was so memorable, and she's coming back now, obviously, having had a baby and made a comeback at the United Cup. And Danielle Collins, we love watching Danielle Collins. And then I have this slightly sinking feeling about all three of those players, that they're so far away from those performances that I've just detailed, Matt, that I'm not that confident that they will end up being that good against Iga Świątek, and she may end up just flattening them. But I think Collins against Kerber could be good.
Yeah, name-wise, it's a fascinating section of the draw, as you've said. But based on current form, you would have to think that actually Świątek's a huge favourite against Kenin, and then also against the winner of Collins Kerber. Of course, Świątek and Kerber played at the United Cup. It was a very competitive first 6 or 7 games or so, and then Świątek ran away with it. I think Kerber was kind of out of gas at that stage of the tournament. She'd played a lot of matches on her comeback. I actually think that, looking a bit beyond those first few names, like, there are still tests, though, for Iga Świątek. I mean, her fourth round is possibly Elina Svitolina, who beat her at Wimbledon last year, and her quarterfinal is possibly Yelena Ostapenko, who beat her at the US Open last year. So her two most recent Grand Slam losses, she would potentially have to play to get to the semi-finals here. So there are sort of those big name tests in the early rounds, even if they're maybe not quite the tests on the actual court that they perhaps should be based on their history. But then there is Svitolina and Ostapenko lurking there. So I still think it is a bit of a tough draw for Świątek overall, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm keen to big up the on-paper fun of Świątek against Kenin and Collins versus Kerber, because it is fun on paper, but I do tend to agree. I'm so seduced by how Świątek has been playing so far this season. It is very hard to see Kenin doing anything like what she did to Coco Gauff in round one of Wimbledon. But who knows? First rounds, nerves, all of that. We know Świątek is trying to implement some new things in her game. Look, I'm going to enjoy this period where we can big up that match, because we might not spend too much time talking about it afterwards. Let's put it that way. In terms of Świątek's half of the draw, it's the same half as Elena Rybakina. It is the same half as Jessica Pegula. They would be semi-final opponents for Świątek. Pegula and Rybakina are seeded to meet in the second quarter-final. Świątek's quarter-final opponent on seeding would be Marketa Vondrousova. You've got Victoria Azarenka lurking in there. You've got a Yelena Ostapenko lurking.
Like, looking at that, the one. I would say that is a tough draw. I would also say Vondrousova. I don't know what sort of fitness she's in, but she's such a difficult player when she's on.
It's just match-up-wise, isn't it? The fact that Świątek's never beaten Ostapenko.
Yeah, of course.
0-4. Like, that's the one.
At least when you look at that draw, you feel as though Świątek's likely to have four players, no matter what, who have done things in this sport. Won Grand Slams, reached Grand Slam finals, Maria Buskova or Linda Noskova, players that you feel have got game. And then, whether it's Vondrousova, Azarenka or Ostapenko, any one of those three in the fourth round is a really good matchup on paper. Interesting, at least, you know?
Yeah, and these technical changes that Świątek's making, they are, I think they're aimed at specifically combating three players, and that's Sabalenka, Rybakina and Ostapenko, big hitters that take her time away. And I want to see her face as many of those as possible, quite frankly.
Quarterfinals, aren't they? Because the fourth round, I've missed out Svitolina in my little assessment there. I suppose Kudermetova as well, but yeah, Svitolina, you'd expect.
Vondrousova would be her scheduled quarterfinal opponent, or Ostapenko. And then it would be Pegula or Rybakina scheduled in the semi-finals. But in that second quarter, so the bottom of the top half, I always end up tying myself in knots in these draw shows.
Me too.
Don't I?
Thanks. I always just look at Matt.
Thanks for bearing with us, folks. In the bottom of the top half, you've got, as I say, Pegula and Rybakina, but you've also got famously good draw, who's not anymore, Jasmine Paolini. She's actually the 26th seed, David. You've got Daria Kazatkina, who's still going in Adelaide this week, or Adelaide, as foreign players seem to call it. You've got a Zheng Qinwen, which is interesting. You've got Emma Raducanu, who's got Shelby Rogers in her opening round, which is fascinating because they're two players kind of in exactly the same boat, aren't they? Haven't played a match. Well, I know Raducanu made a comeback in Auckland last week, but haven't played a Grand Slam match for an awfully long time. Rogers hasn't played since Wimbledon of last year, I don't think. Sloane Stephens is in there. What do we think of that second quarter?
It's bloody great. That top half of the draw is fantastic, I think. I mean, I really do want to see Rybakina Pliskova. I think that's a really interesting slight battle of generations, really.
God, yeah, she's got Pliskova round one.
Yeah, I mean, it's a cracking first round, isn't it? And I do want to see throughout the year, I'm going to keep a close eye on what Zheng Qinwen is doing all year, I think, because what I saw from her at the tail end of last year and in the match you commentated on, Catherine, when she beat Vondrousova at the start of this year in the United Cup, I just feel like this is a player who's finally unlocking the potential that we kind of wondered whether she'd got or not in the last year or so, and I really think it's coming, and just imagine if she would have a real run here.
Yeah, I watched a lot of her at the United Cup. As you say, I commentated on a couple of her matches, which really makes you concentrate, doesn't it? You're literally watching every single shot they're playing, not even fiddling around on your phone at the same time, which is quite an alien experience for me. And I had two separate impressions. One was, bloody hell, she's good. And the other was just a little bit worried at her lack of plan B. She's still extremely young. I think it'll come. I think she's in safe hands. I like her attitude. The first time I saw her actually in Perth was at breakfast in the hotel, and I was like, whoa, she's a physical specimen up close. She is incredibly impressive. I was standing next to her at the avocado bar, sort of cowering. But when she's on, when she's able to be in control of a match, she's sublime. She is as good a hitter as anyone. She's a good mover for her size. You know, scurrying about is never going to be her her MO, but she's not a bad mover, kind of Rybakina style in that respect. But when things aren't going her way, she isn't a problem solver at the moment. She kind of just lets things go off the rails and hopes that her game will come back, which is just a bit of a worry for me. I think she could go on a run here with a win behind her, but I don't think she's quite ready to reach a final or win the thing yet. But could be wrong. The raw materials are there, and they're incredibly impressive, and it would be good fun to see.
It would, and it's an interesting section for her, isn't it? I mean, Castella just like always worries me as a potential opponent for someone. Like, Castella can peak and take you out. I think Jessica Pegula is an interesting proposition at the start of this season. She's not quite been at her best, I would say, yet. I mean, obviously she lost to Katie Bolter at the United Cup. She lost a set yesterday, didn't she, to Bernarda Pera. You know, she's not coming into this slam with the form that she's maybe come into some other slams, Pegula.
Not really Jessica Pegula thinks, those, are they? Those sort of results.
Exactly.
Score lines.
She's usually so reliable. So I'm interested by her. I think Zheng Xinwei and Jessica Pegula would be a fascinating fourth round. But I really like this draw for Rybakina. I think that's a great draw for her. She's got, you know, Pliskova's another hitter. I just think a back Rybakina in that sort of matchup. And I want to see Świątek Rybakina. That's probably the women's match I most want to see at this tournament. I feel like, as you said, Świątek's made some changes to try and combat those big flat strokes of someone like Rybakina who can rush her. We saw it a couple of times, didn't we, at the start of last season. Rybakina crushed Świątek
here, wasn't it? Yeah.
And at Indian Wells. And then we saw it on the clay, and it was a retirement, wasn't it? We never quite sort of fully saw that match through. So I feel like we're owed a good Świątek Rybakina. So I really want to see that. And, you know, them landing in the same half perhaps make that a little bit more likely. So I was quite happy with how this draw came out.
I think she's playing well enough that this likely won't end up being any kind of factor at all. But I do find it a bit curious that Rybakina's playing Adelaide this week.
Yeah. I do too. Maybe, I mean, she missed a lot of tennis last year, and she played a lot of tennis kind of underpowered because of COVID. She was saying she'd had
twice.
a couple of bouts of COVID, and we didn't know the exact reason, but we could see that there was a real problem for her throughout the year. She just looked like somebody who didn't have a full charge of batteries the whole time, so that all adds up. I wonder whether now she's sort of fully fit, she's just trying to get as many reps in as possible.
Yeah,
but
definitely
I do think
could
it's
be
a
that.
Slightly
I mean,
curious.
I guess
decision.
She entered both not knowing how she'd perform in Brisbane, thinking, well, if I only get a couple of matches there, I'd like to get a couple more. But players do that all the time, and what happens is you do well in the first one and you pull out of the second one, and that's just it's tough for those events that fall the week before slams, but it is kind of just part of the deal. And I don't know, as I say, I think she's playing so well and has enough in the tank from not loads of tennis at the end of last season that it'll be okay. But just bookmark it as something that's raised an eyebrow.
It does make you, like, who else is doing that? When
yeah.
you look around at the top players, and she's a proper top player, nobody else is doing that.
Looking at the bottom half then of the women's draw, we've obviously got Sabalenka, the second seed, defending champion, at the bottom. Her scheduled, according to seeding, quarterfinal opponent would be Ons Jabeur. You've also got Ludmila Samsonova, Donna Vekic in there, Ekaterina Alexandrova, Barbora Krejcikova, if she bears a mention just at the moment. Not sure. I think this is a fantastic draw for Aryna Sabalenka.
Yeah.
Agreed. Yeah, I think she's a big, big winner out of this draw. A lot of fun first round matches in this section, like Townsend Barossa. I'm very intrigued by Vekic, Pavlyuchenkova, Samsonova, Anisimova, but I don't really see any of these as like major threats to Sabalenka if Sabalenka's playing well. I think she's come out of this well, Sabalenka.
First time for Sabalenka defending a Grand Slam title. I mean, I guess we might have more of a picture after tomorrow, which is media day, when we'll get a chance to speak to her. But what is our sense about how she will handle that?
It really could go completely different ways. It could totally raise her level. It could make her feel more legitimised than ever before as a champion, and to come out and to underline that champion status, to believe in herself more than ever. I have a slight feeling it might do the opposite, that it might stress her out, that she's so desperate to back it up, that she might... I feel like when it's all flowing and she's not holding the racket too tightly, she's an awesome player. We know how awesome she can be. But she can also miss when she's tight. And look, her draw is great. A couple of qualifiers maybe, or Anna Bogdan in the second round. These are good players, but these are players without much that are going to hurt her. With look, I don't know who the qualifiers are going to be yet, but on paper that's a decent draw. Looking at people who might hurt her, there's nobody really obvious to me in that quarter of the draw. Is there anybody that strikes you that you're thinking I want to see Sabalenka against such and such?
There's a couple that I could imagine. For example, this is a big if, but let's say Taylor Townsend got through to, I think it would be a third round meeting or a fourth round.
Fourth round.
Let's say Taylor Townsend got through to a fourth round meeting with Sabalenka, which is a big if. I totally accept that. But if she gets there, she's in good form, she's confident, I can imagine Sabalenka not enjoying that
at all. If that was like a second round, I would be concerned for Sabalenka because of the match type, or a first round. I mean, that could even be a first round, couldn't it? But I think the big question mark is, does Townsend get there? Because Badosa's not bad, but the winner of Pavlyuchenkova and Vekic, I think, is probably the favourite against her, is my expectation.
Tough draw for Donna Vekic, that, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Defending quarter-final points.
Yeah.
Pavlyuchenkova well.
Probably Serenko in the second round. No, sorry, it goes up, doesn't it? Probably the winner of Townsend, Badosa, in the second round. Yeah, I think with Sabalenka, I actually think, not that she needs a good draw, but, you know, pending who those qualifiers are, she could do with a couple of real statement wins in the opening rounds. Because I do just think that chastening loss to Rybakina must be a bit of a confidence denter for her. I think she could do with feeling a bit puffed up.
6-3, 6-love, wasn't it? Yeah. I mean, that is a total tonking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's... just quickly on Ons Jabeur. In that bottom half, bottom quarter. We're not talking about her, are we? Should we be? Succeed?
Difficult to know, really, with her, isn't it? I mean, I would love to see her against Mira Andreeva in the second round.
Yes, please.
You know, that is a really fascinating match, isn't it? Andreeva, who says she loves Ons Jabeur and thinks she plays like her, even though none of us
even
can
see
her.
She absolutely doesn't. Yeah.
But I would love to see the matchup. Mm. And I actually think that stylistically it would be a beautiful match to watch. I've only just started watching the documentary about her, and we'll try and cover it in a show we're going to do about the documentaries. But the scene they show early on in that where she loses here, I think, second round, and she goes off the court and she has a medical issue that makes her coach think she's about to die. You know, and it's really shocking what happened to her. There was real concern there. And so I wonder how she'll feel coming back a year on. I hope she's in good health now, and hope she just has an opportunity to play at 100% again. You know, it feels like a long time. Feels like she's had it at Wimbledon, and okay, the experiences in the final, this last one, was a tough one for her. But I don't feel like the Australian Open has got to see her at her best yet, and I really want to see that.
Do you know who else I think this is a good draw for? Looking at the third quarter now, the top of the bottom half, I think this is a good draw for Naomi Osaka. Discuss.
She's got Caroline Garcia.
Yep. So Garcia ran one, but obviously as an unseeded player, she was going to have to face a seed in either the first or the second round. We watched Garcia, Matt and I, lose last night. Who do we watch her lose to?
Ostapenko.
Ostapenko. Which, okay, to be fair, anyone can lose to Ostapenko. But it was not a confident Garcia, I didn't think. I know she played pretty well in the United Cup, didn't she? But yeah. I found her unconvincing. Against Ostapenko. Yeah,
it's
look,
so hard to say I with know. Caroline Garcia.
Like, I know, but okay.
More often than not, I would say this is a good draw. Because more often than not, Garcia doesn't peak.
And I think Garcia is looking at that draw going, oh, God.
Yeah, probably. I mean, Garcia did play well against Świątek in the United Cup. And actually, she's the only player to take a set off Świątek in ages.
Nothing to lose against Świątek, though.
Agreed. And but it's just, look, there's one or two little concerns about Osaka. You know, I don't think it's big concerns. The fact that she's pulled out of these exhibition events, I don't think it's I don't think she's injured. But you know, she played two good matches, but two sort of slightly incomplete matches, I suppose. You know, she didn't quite have her best tennis the whole time. And, you know, Garcia is another step up from that. But if she wins it, it's, you know, it sort of becomes a really good draw, doesn't it? Because you then take Garcia's seeding. You then got a potential sensation situation in the second round with Daria Saville. But other than that, I do think it sort of then becomes okay. Yeah, it's like Garcia is just like top of my list of, I don't know.
Yeah, I know. But look, the top seeds in this quarter are Coco Gauff, who, yep, she won the most recent slam. She is a contender here for sure. But of those top four seeds, I think she's the one you'd most like to fall in the same section as. And Maria Sakkari, number eight seed, who, again, all due respect, and I guess the pressure is so off her after a pretty horrible 2023, that sounds like the sort of situation where Maria Sakkari could produce her absolute best. I realise that. But I think of all the quarters, in terms of the biggest names in this quarter, it might be the kindest one. But you do have Leila Fernandez in there.
Can I give you a wish list?
Yeah.
An early wish list, please. I would like to see Leila Fernandez against Coco Gauff in round three.
Yes,
winner
please.
To face Osaka.
I like where your head's
There's
at.
My wish list for the Australian Open.
And in the section above that, David, you've got Haddad Shmaia.
Yeah. I do love Haddad Shmaia as a person. I think she's wonderful.
I think that's a good section
she's
for her.
She's not had a very good start
She
for
hasn't.
Year.
But look, Linda Fravitova opening round is tough. Wozniacki is in this section. But I think she could be eyeing fourth round here. Should be eyeing fourth round here. David looks totally unconvinced. You're supposed to be our Haddad Shmaia guy,
no,
David.
I think she should be eyeing the court.
I've got to say, I agree with you. I think Haddad Shmaia should be in the fourth round, looking at that draw. I feel like she's a player who usually just keeps on delivering, and the fact that she's started the year badly, that would concern me for her, because I think she's a rhythm player who needs to get into a groove. And like when she won that Zhuhai title at the end of last year, you could see it coming. I know I predicted it, but it didn't take a genius to do that. You could tell she was in good nick. Right now, I don't feel that. So she's got Fravetta in the first round, and
she
then
wants
maybe
to get a lot of tennis balls. Cerebes Tormo in the second
round.
Yeah,
exactly. So I think we'll know a lot more after, if she gets through those two and looks decent. It would be really interesting to see her against Wozniacki, frankly, in round three.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
On to the men's draw we go. Matt and I had a little conversation last night while we were waiting for David's plane to land. We were tracking him minute by minute. And the conversation was Djokovic, Alcaraz, Sinner. What configuration draw-wise do you want to have? Where do you want Jannik Sinner? Whose half do you want Jannik Sinner to fall in? And Matt and I both decided we would like him to fall in Djokovic's half. And it really is going to be our year because... that's what's happened. Thank you very much.
What, can I ask why you both wanted Sinner in Djokovic's half when you consider what a great rivalry Sinner and Alcaraz have had so far?
For me, it's the fact that I want to know what the Davis Cup meant. You know, I want to know what the ATP Finals last season meant. You know, when Jannik Sinner got those wins over Novak Djokovic, where there was a considerable step up in his level of performance. Like, he was incredible in both of those matches, saving three straight match points at the Davis Cup, of course, doing to Djokovic something we've not seen someone do before. But there was always that question of, okay, but I need to see it in a slam. And I want that data. I want to know whether Jannik Sinner can bring his best and push Novak Djokovic truly on Novak Djokovic's favourite court in the world.
In a night match?
Yeah.
In the semi-finals?
Yeah. Like, then we will have learnt so much about Jannik Sinner. That's why I want it, personally, because I just think it would be fascinating. And look, it might be a disappointment. Djokovic might beat him in straight sets, but then at least we know. And I don't think it would be. I would have high hopes for that.
Jannik Sinner is a really funny one for me, and proof of just how much... recency bias, I don't speak for all of us, but how much recency bias I am guilty of in tennis, because the last time we were talking about a major live tennis event, it was the Davis Cup finals and the ATP finals, right, where Jannik Sinner was the main man. Okay, he didn't win the ATP finals, but, you know, on aggregate over those two events, the main man. But he hasn't played a warm-up tournament in Australia or leading up to the Australian Open. I haven't seen any arrivals clips of him. Matt and I watched a couple of episodes of Breakpoint last night, and he wasn't even mentioned in the episode about young up-and-comers because he's not, you know, he's not either not been asked or not agreed to be part of that show. So, like, obviously, he is a major factor here, but I do keep forgetting he exists. he's just not at the front of my mind.
Out of sight, out of mind situation.
Like, even just the social media thing, like Tennis Australia, this event, the whole Australian tennis summer, they're so hot on social media, aren't they? I feel like I've seen every top player walking through the airport with all their bags arriving on this soil. I don't even know where Yannick Sinner is in the world. Is he in Australia? Has he practiced yet? What is he doing? Does he have a new haircut?
Well, the Carranza boys won't be happy if he's had a bloody shaved head, will they? But listen, what I find simultaneously interesting is that I feel like what he has done has convinced you, really, that he's got more to him than maybe you realised over the last few months. And I think once the tournament gets going, what I'm expecting him to do is be ruthlessly efficient in a way that we don't necessarily see from him in the past. I think that that's often a tell on a player when they're going to another level, is that they just start dispatching people. I mean, I actually think that Botic van der Zandschulp in the first round is a tough match in that he's a good ball striker and he won't mind Sinner's ball generally, but I expect in the form that they're in, Sinner should be just wiping him off the court in three straight sets. Or, you know, there might be close sets, but he should be dispatching him without losing any sets. And I just feel like once he gets past that, the first two or three rounds should be fine for him. And look, he should be up against Djokovic in that semi-final on paper.
It's a good draw for Djokovic, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's pretty hard to plot a difficult draw for him. Again, he's got a potential sensation situation in the second round.
Popperin, I don't think he's beating Djokovic, but it'd be fun.
I'd love to see Popperin playing his very best tennis in front of Aussies against Djokovic, just to see what would happen.
I don't know whether Djokovic would allow him to play his best tennis.
That's true.
You know, returns on his toes,
Djokovic
that kind
is
of thing.
Absolutely not interested in sensations.
No, not
his
at all.
Business is making them look thoroughly unsensational.
Remember what he did to Divinor last year.
Poor Divinor.
I mean, horrible.
Obviously, Djokovic Murray is jumping out as a potential round three.
We might not survive that.
No.
Does anybody here think that Djokovic against Murray happens at this tournament?
Oh, David, I'm unable to be rational about such questions.
I think it will.
That requires Murray to beat Thomas Martin Echeverry.
Djokovic is getting there.
And then Djokovic is getting there.
Either Monfils or Hanfman.
I think Murray can do that.
I think if he beats Echeverry, he beats Monfils or Hanfman.
I don't think he beats Echeverry.
It's tough.
I'm sorry to say.
I don't know what Echeverry's been doing recently.
Well, he lost to Thomas Mahatch the other day. I'm big on Thomas Mahatch.
Anybody can lose to Thomas Mahatch.
Stop talking about Thomas Mahatch.
Novak Djokovic could lose to Thomas Mahatch if Mahatch decided to turn it on. That's a joke, Djokovic fans.
I mean, the problem for Murray is that even if he gets through Thomas Martin Echeverry, he's likely expended 5 hours.
Well, look, we've all likely expended 5 hours, yeah.
Yeah, but then we don't then have to play.
We have to do a podcast the next day. He gets the next day off. We're daily, mate.
I remember last year, Murray was on site after beating Kokkinakis before we were.
Was he?
Yeah, it was a real moment of... Oh, okay.
We better
stop
complaining.
What am I worrying about?
We're going to get Ben Shelton against Novak Djokovic, aren't we, in round four?
Are we?
Yeah.
I hope so.
Who
do you think's beating
him?
Shelton?
Well, there's an Adrian Mannarino.
Yeah.
I back Shelton.
I think I back Shelton,
but
well.
I wouldn't be like totally surprised if he didn't
just,
get there.
Right. Again, don't want to be a party pooper here. I don't love that Shelton's playing this week. He's
See,
in Auckland.
I'm all right with it.
Are you? Because
he lost first round last week, admittedly against Roman Safiulin, who's a seriously dangerous player.
Yeah.
And a lot of people will be glad if he's nowhere near them. But I feel like Shelton, for a start, he's so young and he's got so much energy and he's ready to rumble all the time.
Is it that or is it appearance fee, though?
Well, I'm sure if he is getting one, I'm sure that would be part of it. But I just feel like... he wants to get going. He needs a couple of wins now before he turns up in the first round of a best of. He's got energy to burn. I mean, yes, I suppose you might be putting stress on body parts that break down. Who knows? I just feel like if he were to have a good run this week and come in off that, he could just bulldoze his way through the first round or two.
It's really tough for players, especially with a Sunday start now. It's really tough for players to have a good run the week before. I know he's young and exuberant, but I just...
I'm all right with it.
It depends whether we're talking about him as a potential sort of semi-final title contender, really, doesn't it? Because I don't think those people do that. But if we're talking about...
He's not in that
a disruptor that he's a continuation of what he's been up to now, then yeah, it's probably fine.
Rebakina, to me, is the question mark. But actually, in those two particular cases, I do get it. And I feel like, as long as they don't get injured, I don't think it hurts them. I think it helps them.
It's such an interesting case, Shelton. Like, I can't really think of another example where he's had, like, two massive breakout results at the Slam. So we are thinking of him in those terms of going deep in the second week of Slams. He did it at both of the hard court Slams last year. But other than the sort of little results he had post-US Open, he did nothing else on the tour. Like, he needs, points-wise, he's got so much that he can potentially gain from a week like Auckland.
He won a title.
Yeah, but after the US Open, I'm saying. Like, all that whole period.
Right. But it was... We've heard sort of Brian Shelton explain that to us, haven't we? That was sort of Ben Shelton seeing the world and
exactly,
sort
but,
of
so
learning
he's got,
about
but
being
he's got
on
so
tour.
Much to, he's got so much to gain in these tour events over the next 8 months, and he's got a lot to lose from the Slams.
Including experience.
All of his points are Slam points, basically.
That's interesting spot to be in.
Like, yeah. But
if he went and won, I don't know what stage he's at in this tournament at the moment, but if he were to go and race through this tournament and win it, that would put a bit of fear into the locker room again, I think, because it's not just a big serve, it's results.
Only time will tell, absolutely. Stefanos Tsitsipas is in that top quarter. He faces Matteo Berrettini in the opening round, which sort of would have been great a few years ago, but they wouldn't have been meeting in the opening round a few years ago, so one of those.
That got the biggest gasp, I think.
Generally,
it was a pretty gasp-free zone in that room.
Yeah, it was.
I mean, there were plenty of interesting round one matches, as we've been through, especially in the women's draw. But I don't know, just it wasn't the crowd, I don't think, for gasps, really, was it?
No.
Actually, by the way, the chap next to me, when the draw was being made, saw Berrettini come out when Sinner was already there, two spaces below him, and he thought it was Berrettini, Sinner first round. And then he goes, oh, phew. And then suddenly Tsitsipas comes out against Berrettini. And he goes, oh.
The seeded opponent, the opponent on seeding in the fourth round for Jannik Sinner would be Karen Khachanov. Absolutely no idea what to predict for him, other than that every time we say that, he sort of goes and makes the quarters or the semis, doesn't he?
That's tough against Altmaier.
That's his
first
thing.
Round.
Yeah, that is tough. De Minaur is in this second quarter. He would be a fourth round opponent for Andrei Rublev. Do we think he is getting there? Matt, I'm looking at you.
You're asking me if he's going to beat Nicholas Jarry
in
the third round. yes, I think De Minaur will get there. I'd like to see De Minaur Rublev. I think that'd be a good time, I think. Yes, I think he'll get there. And then if he does, Sinner loves playing De Minaur.
Yes.
That would be a great quarterfinal for Sinner. Diminor. I mean, that matchup, he just absolutely dominates.
Davis Cup final, scar tissue.
Yeah.
Turning our attention to the bottom half of the men's draw. Obviously, second seed Carlos Alcaraz is at the very bottom. Tough draw for him, I think.
I thought that too. Because every match could be a bit of a hassle. And I don't know, I still don't think Alcaraz has quite figured out how to do what I've just said Sinner needs to start doing, which is just rampaging through draws uneventfully early on. And Richard Gasquet, I don't think is a bad shout, to be honest. I think Gasquet is finally just tailing away now. He can't really keep up with these guys, so I think that's not bad. But either Evans or Sonego could end up being a bit of a showtime match, which, whilst I would very much expect Alcaraz to win, and it would be fun, I'm not sure it's the greatest thing for Alcaraz to just be getting distracted into all these types of things, and then you may have Alexander Bublik in round three. I mean, that's a tough series. When I put this to Catherine earlier on, you just said, yeah, but if Alcaraz plays his best, he just beats them all, doesn't he? All these people that are in that tough draw. And that is the truth. If you think about it, if he plays properly, it'd be very surprising if he doesn't end up against Alexander Zverev in the quarterfinals.
Well, Tommy Paul always plays well against Alcaraz. Mm. And that's a potential fourth round. To me, that would be the first match I'd be worried about Alcaraz in. I think he beats Gasquet handily. I think Evans-Sonego becomes a shot-making match and Alcaraz wins. Same with Bublik. But Paul has beaten Alcaraz and obviously likes the conditions here, reached the semis last year. I'd be a bit worried about that for Alcaraz, but I still think, I'm probably going to end up putting him in the final.
Do we worry about Zverev for Alcaraz?
I think there's reason to. I mean, because I think Zverev's probably in the form of his life right now. He really should be in the quarterfinals, looking at what I think is a very good draw for Zverev.
Is Zverev in the form of his life?
He lost to Alex de Minaur.
Just won the United Cup. Just got over the line against Hurkacz.
I think he's in really good form.
He's in good form. I don't know if he's in the form of his life. US Open final, that semi-final he played at the French Open against Nadal was like quality. I don't know. I still don't feel like I've seen Zverev have really big wins since his comeback.
No. Well, I still feel that when he comes up against Djokovic, Alcaraz, Medvedev, at their best, he loses.
Yeah.
He loses every time. Doesn't really matter what he does at a Grand Slam. If they play their best, he loses. He beats Sinner at the US Open. I think if you put that match in normal conditions, I would back Sinner.
Yeah.
Looking at the third quarter now, the top of the bottom half for those people that like to be confused. We have 8th seed Holger Rune in there. We have 3rd seed Daniil Medvedev in there. We have Hubert Hurkacz in there. I would, for the moment, like to ignore all of those and draw your attention to 13th seed Grigor Dimitrov.
Well, you never know, do you?
Martin Fucsovics, round one. Fourth round opponent, according to seeding, would be Daniil Medvedev. Quarterfinal opponent would be Holger Rune. Are those two matches happening, and is he winning them?
I'm expecting the first one to happen. I expect that Dimitrov will face Medvedev. I would expect Medvedev to win.
So that semi-final run isn't happening here then?
Is that what I said would happen this year?
Didn't you say he would equal his best slam performance?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
So the thing is, David, if it's not happening here, and I feel the same as you about this, but if it's not happening here when he's in this form, where's it happening? Because these players are always going to be there. You know, barring some sort of nuclear event in the tennis world.
I might change my mind as the week goes on.
Grass?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, but look, he's done well to avoid, but you know, he's could end up in the same section as Djokovic somewhere else.
Yeah,
like there's always going to be something and someone he needs to beat these players to get to a quarter and a semi.
There's an unknown with Medvedev, isn't there? Look, we haven't seen him. He's been like
I
Alcaraz.
I've seen him arrive, though.
Yeah.
I do know he's in the country.
Like Alcaraz, like Sinner, he's chosen not not to play a warm-up event.
What do you think about that generally? I mean, there's the other extreme is, as we talk about Shelton and Rybakina playing the week before, these guys literally not playing a competitive tour match. They're playing exhibitions, and there are quite a lot of them. They're getting reps in that way. Do you feel it makes any difference positively or negatively? Do you think it depends on the player? How do you feel generally about the fact that Sinner, Medvedev and Alcaraz just haven't played a match competitively coming into this tournament? Makes me edgy on their behalf.
It surprises me.
I think Djokovic can do it.
Yeah, Djokovic, I don't think anything of it at all. It surprised me when I saw that that's what they were doing. And they're obviously relying on being able to work their way into a tournament. But it's taking a risk, for sure.
Mm. And I think part of the decision was trying to get a longer off season. You know, they were all in Europe for a much longer time. Obviously, it wasn't like they came over really early and just didn't play. They actually stayed in Europe for a long time. And I mean, there could be some sort of bonus payoff for that down the line. You know, a bit more time working on your game. Just a bit more time off. We're always talking about players not having time off.
But
I mean, I know.
But they've all.
Alcaraz played an exhibition.
Yeah, Medvedev's played exhibitions. I don't know about Sinner, but I agree with you about time off. I'm all for tennis players, the tennis season having more time off. But basically, the trade-off here is Australian Open lead-up events for exhibitions, in order to preserve the time off. And I don't love that. I mean, it is just a fact of tennis. But what do we think?
I would feel that they should be playing one competitive tournament before this. I do. I'd be surprised if it makes any difference to Medvedev, because he's just so experienced. Although, you know, he hasn't always done that well here. Sometimes he's done well. I mean, last year he lost to Seb Korda. I don't really read anything into that. I think he'll be okay. For Alcaraz and for Sinner, who are still so early on in their careers, it surprises me that they haven't played a tour or a United Cup type event, if it's available to them. There's something that they could have played. And, I am surprised. But that said, I still expect them to go through the draw and end up in the semi-finals, both of them.
Mm. To face, so you expect Medvedev to beat Rune in the quarters?
Would love to see.
Well,
that.
I didn't say that. I said I expect
Sinner and
Alcaraz and Djokovic.
Medvedev.
I mean, look, I haven't done my final predictions yet because we haven't done but that's how I'm leaning. I mean, look, it's no great shakes, is it? They're the top seeded players. They're the ones who are in form. They're the ones everybody expects. But I don't look down here. I do think Zverev is a threat if Alcaraz isn't at his best. But if Alcaraz is at his best, he wins.
Altafis, potential third-round opponent for Rune?
Yeah, I'd love to see it. I find Rune fascinating, really, coming into this draw just to see where he is. You know, a year ago we were fascinated by him, and I felt a bit underwhelmed. He lost that match to Andrei Rublev, didn't he, in the end? And I wasn't expecting that. I think we maybe expected a bit too much of him too soon, based on the win he had against Djokovic and the Paris run and all the rest of it. But now with Becker and what's the chap's name he's just signed up with?
Severin Luti.
Yeah. Sorry, Severin. You know, I'm fascinated to see where he is, because he's clearly so ravenous to be the man.
And for everybody messaging us on various platforms saying, oh, we're coming to Melbourne Park, we'd love to track you down, say hello if you can. You can find David at Constant Lestienne versus Alejandro Davidovich Fekina.
Yes.
On whatever day and time that match will be happening.
Correct. I can't
that
wait.
That is going to be wild.
Fun time.
Yeah.
Underarm serve, I reckon, at least one.
Any other players or matches you would like to draw attention to from this men's draw?
Did we mention the
I was going
the sad
to,
off?
No, I was going to, but it made me. I just looked at the names and it made me so sad. That we have a Felix Auger-Aliassime against Dominic Thiem first round.
God, that should be so exciting.
He's hanging
it?
On to a seeding, Felix, which is good going.
Yeah, I guess the Basel title will do that.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to watch it. I'm going to put myself
At least one of them's going to win.
Yeah, one of them is guaranteed a win.
That's a glasses half.
I mean, is Felix fit? Will he play? That's TBC, isn't it?
That's TBC.
Yeah. Anyway, enough of that sadness.
There's the glasses half empty version. Felix doesn't play and team loses.
Yeah. Oh, God. Look, I don't think it's one of those draws where there's a dun-dun-dun, jaw-drop, ooh-la-la moment, but I think it's set things up pretty nicely.
We love draw day.
I mean, the whole draw could have been cancelled and I'd still probably be on a high today saying it's all going to be great, but I think it really is all going to be great.
Yeah.
We've got some extremely exciting plans coming up over the next... Well, it's not even a fortnight anymore, is it? It's 15 days plus the build-up. It's basically 3 weeks, folks, isn't it?
Yep.
Australian Open now. Some cards to mark for you for upcoming shows. First of all, for friends of the Tennis Podcast, you heard David mention the Jan Strubber documentary, and I mentioned that Matt and I watched a couple of episodes of Series 2 of Breakpoint last night, which was released yesterday, and we have been receiving a lot of messages about Breakpoint. There is a lot of chatter on social media about Breakpoint and the editorial decisions that the documentary makers have made in terms of which stories and which players to feature prominently, and obviously in particular there I'm talking about Alexander Zverev, who, look, we haven't watched the episode yet. If it weren't part of our jobs, I would probably swerve it for the sake of my mental health. But we are going to watch it because we think it's important. And we are going to produce a Friends show to talk about our impressions and thoughts. We're also going to cover the Ons Jabeur documentary in that. And... can't tell you exactly what they're going to be, but I imagine they're going to be many and strong, those opinions and thoughts, just as a lot of those being expressed online are just at the moment.
Yeah, because, I mean, just if we take the Zverev episode in isolation, as you've said, none of us have watched it yet, but I've read numerous reviews of it, and it appears that one of the six episodes of Breakpoint, a 46-minute episode, features exclusively, really, Alexander Zverev, or at least centres on him, and doesn't mention anywhere that he has currently an allegation of domestic abuse against him, which he very much denies and is appealing against, but which he has been charged for at this point in Germany, and it doesn't mention that. And I just... Well, two things that I think. One is it really the right choice to be going to be featuring him at the moment when you could feature so many other people? And secondly, if you are going to feature him, you just have to mention that that is an ongoing situation and that that charge has been made and that he is appealing it and that it is a thing. Not just pretending that it isn't, because, I mean, there was one review I read from somebody who isn't involved in the tennis world and hasn't worked in sport and isn't following and wasn't even aware of the fact that that case was a thing and those allegations had been made, and just wrote about his uplifting comeback from injury. And I'm afraid the new people that come into tennis that are trying to follow the sport and that the sport is trying to get interest in the sport only are getting that impression of him exclusively, and that isn't right. That just isn't right. I'll firm up my view of it when I see it, but that is what we understand it to be the case, and I really am shocked by that.
Yeah, we all are. That's the headline. We're all pretty shocked. We all intend to watch that episode and watch all the episodes between us over the next couple of days, plus the Ons Jabeur documentary, and we're going to produce a Friends show focusing on those over the next couple of days.
And Also, just the other bit of Zverev news was elected to the ATP Player Council.
Elected. It's all just absolutely bleak. It's all pretty disheartening, really. It's the sort of stuff that makes you think, does anyone actually...
No one cares.
Does anyone actually care?
Yeah.
Am I living in the same world that everybody else is? Thank goodness for you two and all of our listeners and friends. So that's going to be coming up in the next couple of days. We also have new for 2024, four friends of the Tennis Podcast, a monthly column by Hannah Wilkes, who so many of you will be familiar with from her work on Twitter and moderating our YouTube live shows. Hannah has become an essential part of the Tennis Podcast team, and we're so lucky to have her. The first of her monthly columns is going to be out tomorrow, and it is going to be available for all listeners to the Tennis Podcast, not just friends of the podcast. It's a little bit of a tease, and honestly, a tease for a tease, it's absolutely breathtaking. It's just a wonderful piece of work. I don't want to say anything more because I honestly don't think I can do it justice, but I messaged Hannah in the middle of the night the second I read her draft, just because I couldn't, my fingers were moving and I felt compelled. And just a hint, it's about Grigor Dimitrov. And that's going to be sensational. So the first of those is going to be out tomorrow. There will be a link to it in our newsletter. And then the remaining Hannah Wilkes columns for 2024 will be available exclusively for friends of the Tennis Podcast. And of course, if you want to become a friend of the Tennis Podcast, the link to do that is in our show notes. It is coming up to your very last chance to take us on at predictions for the whole year, or to snap up a guest editor position. So lots to play for in the friends game. And last but not least on the laundry list of upcoming things is our live YouTube Media Day show. Don't worry, folks, it's our normal Media Day preview tennis podcast. It is going to be available as a podcast as per usual, but it is also going to be live and on demand on YouTube, and the timing for that is going to be Melbourne time, 8 a.m. Saturday morning. That is, I've done the maths here, 9 p.m. Friday night UK time, 4 p.m. US East Coast time, and 1 p.m. US West Coast time. I realise that's not every time zone covered, but I feel like I've given enough time zone pillars there that people can hang what they need to.
It's just confusing, isn't it? Because it's different days.
Yes.
So it's 8 a.m. Saturday here, but those times you said are Friday in the States.
Yeah. Why? Time zones are a wild, wild thing. So that is all coming up. Which leaves only for me to tell you about our Australian Open mascot. Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to introduce you to Usher, who is owned by Katie Bullivant. Usher is a 13-year-old labradoodle that Katie says they got when they lived in Boston. She says he may be getting on a bit and have lost a few teeth, but he still has a nifty turn of speed when he spots a squirrel. Squirrel? He also loves sniffing out moles, as you can see from the picture. I would love to say that he'd be excited to bump into Billie Jean on Wimbledon Common, but as dog people, he would definitely much prefer Catherine. Oh, thank you, Katie. Katie says, I spent a very happy 9 months in Melbourne before I went to uni in 1985, and my sister has lived in Melbourne for 25 years, so it's very fitting that Usher is the mascot for the Aussie Open. Usher will be featuring on our social media. Please, by the way, do follow us on Instagram and on Twitter. There's good stuff happening there, folks. And Usher will also be featuring in our newsletter. Welcome, Usher.
Yeah!
My favourite of the two Ushers that I know in the world by quite a long shot.
And a returning mascot, because Usher was an episode mascot last year.
I feel like we didn't get all of that backstory about Usher when he was an episode mascot. I feel like I know him more now.
Exactly.
Which is great. So welcome, Usher. Thanks for coming along on this Australian Open journey. We, of course, have our mascots. David has Francis.
Hi, Francis.
Matt's got Haider and Soma.
Hello, yes. I'm trying to live up to two mascots, and my predictions are bad.
And I, in an extraordinary turn of events, have Darwin. Hello, Darwin. Welcome to the dark side. Billie Jean is once again sponsored by Billie Jean King and Alana Cross. Our top folks and executive producers are Greg, Chris, Jamie and Jeff. And Matt, we have shout-outs.
Yes, although quite a bad thing has happened in that I've had my phone resting on my... on my knee for the podcast, and it's overheated and shut down at an inopportune moment. But I do remember two of them.
Okay, we can do two. Do you remember the blurbs as well?
Well, I know we have Chris Chu.
Oh, hello, Chris.
We know Chris.
We know Chris.
Chris is from New Haven.
Connecticut?
Yes.
Did we drive through New Haven? We did, you know.
We did. Great shout.
Matt and I have now officially been to Connecticut. We went to that Dunkin' Donuts that didn't have a toilet. Or did have a toilet, but definitely wouldn't let us use it.
We weren't allowed to use it.
Matt had to talk me down from weeing in someone's front garden.
I think I did the right thing.
Yeah. Chris, hope you enjoyed your shout-out.
And our other shout-out is for Max Lane. Max is...
This is stunning work from Matt.
Max
right
is in Gateshead. Or Gateshead, as my friends in the north would say. And Max has been gifted the shout-out from his mum, Elise, who had her shout-out last year.
I remember Elise because we wondered if Elise Cornet was...
Did we not go Elise Mertens?
Well, was it Elise or Elise?
It was an E, I believe.
It was E, so we would have gone Elise Mertens.
We'd have got to Mertens via Elise Cornet.
Yeah, okay. Max... Thank you very much. There must be Tennis Max's Eisenbud.
Purcell.
A sensation. Go on, Max.
Max Mernyi.
Yes.
Very good. Very not, good. To my knowledge, ever a sensation.
He was briefly... Wasn't he... Was he New Balls, Please?
He was.
Yeah.
In singles.
Yes. And Max Eisenbud, a sensation in the agent world. There you go.
Max, we thank you very much. And Elise, of course, for gifting Max and us the shout-out. And a particular thank you and congratulations to Matt for doing shout-outs off the top of his head. What a way to start the Australian Open 2024. It is going to be fun, folks. We have... our media day show to come on Saturday Australian time, Friday most other places, and of course available as a podcast whenever you want to listen to it. And then of course remember we have the Sunday start this year here in Melbourne, so daily shows from Melbourne Park start from Sunday and run through for 15 days. It is so exciting. It is a joy to have your company. We'll speak to you very soon.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
The Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin. Investment professionals reveal their best mentors, how they find their next great idea, and a few funny stories. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. American Funds Distributors, Inc.